We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 394 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilpin, and I have the pleasure of being joined by Ines Braga-Sampu from Renascença. I think I got all that right, Ines, but thanks for joining the show.
Thank you for inviting me. Hi.
So the reason why Ines joins me today is that I'm giving the disclaimer right here up front. I know I have some listeners that don't love listening to the feminist stuff, and they kind of are only here to listen to and care about the men's version of things. But here's a disclaimer: with the crazy offseason for the men's first team at Barcelona over the summer, plus Alexia Putellas' injury, which I have to admit greatly hurt my heart, frustrated me, and kind of took me away for a little bit, I haven't given the proper attention this year to the Barça Femení. So that is what we're doing today in totality. So if you're here for the men's stuff, they're on the international break, so we'll have them again in a few days, don't you worry. So today is all about the Femení, and where I want to start here, Ines, is of course with the world transfer record signing, a player that, if you'd asked me over the last 5 years, who would be the new world transfer record holder, if you will, in women's football, Carrie Walsh was not going to be, I'm even thinking the last year, I don't think she would have been in, what, the top 10, top 20 of that list, yet here we are at more than €400,000. She arrives to the Barça Femení, a 25-year-old defensive midfielder. She's a pivot, defensive midfielder, whatever you want to call it, not really even a goal scorer, and yet she arrives to Barcelona. So could you talk a little bit just about what you know about how that deal came together? And obviously, Alexia Putellas' injury kind of is going to hang over this whole show, and I feel like we're going to bring it up every segment, but of course, that's a big part of this as well.
Well, yeah, I think we could start with the value. I think the value, you know, the fact that it's a world record fee also shows how structured Barcelona's approach to the market is, because, you know, like you said, the first instinct would be to get a super goal scorer, like, and you have those people like Katoto or Schuller or Mirema, but they went for a midfielder because they recognized what they were missing. And in this case, it's someone, it's another midfielder. Because Alexia is out, Aitana is also having some injury problems, and you also need someone for Patri Guijarro, even though they have Engen, who hasn't really been able to, you know, make space for herself in the Barcelona first team. So I think it shows that they know what they're doing. They're not just throwing money around at the first person that scores 20, 30, 40 goals a season. And Kira Walsh is a really, really, really good player, a really good midfielder, and she can play basically everywhere in the midfield. And I mean, I bet if you place her as a center back, she would also be able to do that, because she's just a really, really intelligent player. She's also technically skilled. Her long passing, short passing, long passing are amazing. She's tactically also very, very good. I don't think she will be able to displace Patri from the starting lineup, because for me, Patri is maybe the best defensive midfielder in the world, but he is there as a super quality option, super quality alternative to anyone in the midfield, because she can also play in Alexis' position. She will obviously be a different player entirely, but it gives Jonathan Giraldez, you know, different options, a different player, different things to play with. And I think it's also, I mean, she's wanted to leave Manchester City for over a year. Mm-hmm. I remember when they lost to Real Madrid last year, there were rumors that she wanted to leave. And this time there was Zach Press again. And the fact that she was, for me, the best player in the Euros, she was the best player for the best team, for England, I think that helped her case for leaving Barcelona, for leaving Manchester City, actually. And Barcelona being so keen on hiring her, I think that helped. Of course, City weren't going to just let their best or one of their best players leave for nothing. They're a very rich club. So it makes sense that they would be strict in their negotiation. And the fact, I think it's the sum, you know, the fee, the transfer fee is a result of all those things, you know, the fact that she was so good at the Euros, she's such a good player. Barcelona needed another midfielder, and City are financially comfortable enough to, you know, to have a strong negotiating position. So that all piled up and resulted in such a high transfer fee. And the fact that she can bring so many different things to Barcelona's midfield, either as a starter or as a sub, or even Jonathan Giraldez can actually, you know, can even choose to change her midfield, you know, their playing formation for certain games. So I think it makes sense that this was a world record transfer fee. And also, and this is a more of a image thing, Barcelona have pretty much shown that they're here to stay as one of the strongest teams in the world, and making, you know, this breaking the world record transfer fee is also a statement. It's a statement of strength, power, and of intention as well. So I think ultimately it makes sense that they were the club to do that, to break that record. And considering the context, it makes sense that Kira Walsh would be the player to be the protagonist of such a, you know, momentous transfer in women's football.
Well, yeah, I think you hit all the points there, right? That it was the number is a lot to do with the England winning the Euros, and that being that tournament bump. We saw Lecky Martens when she originally came all those years ago after she had won for the Netherlands. We saw a similar fee. The fee was even smaller back then. And you see like the growth of women's football and what those numbers are becoming and what they're representing. And so I think this world record transfer fee is going to be broken very quickly the next transfer window. Obviously, I think whether it's Bayern and PSG, or PSG, I'll say them three times, Man City, Manchester United, Arsenal, Lyon, all these different clubs who are now investing, Real Madrid even, are investing in their women's teams, right? So I can easily see one of those teams breaking the transfer fee and this kind of, again, 400,000 euros is what we're talking about here. So again, it's not, say, easy, but as far as a club's total budget, it's the other reason too why I saw, it's, you know, some galaxy brain, the smarties on the internet going, well, how come Barcelona, you know, they're in all this financial trouble, still believing those things, and then saying, how are they breaking the world transfer fee for women? And then you actually talk about the numbers here. We're not talking about millions and millions of euros. We're talking about 400,000 euros. So the budget for the Femenil is...
And like a couple of years ago, if I'm not mistaken, there was news that Barcelona, the women's team was the only section of the Barcelona club that actually made more than they than they cost. So yeah.
Yeah, they were actually bringing in a profit. They were actually bringing in revenue, which is, again, and they also filled the Camp Nou with 91,000 people twice last season. So they are, and with what Barcelona cares to bring in at the gate, again, that's an important number. The other last thing I had on Walsh was that because Man City were already eliminated from the Champions League, that also gave her the negotiating power to say, hey, I've been asking to leave. Let me go now. We're not in the Champions League anymore. Okay.
Exactly.
Walsh isn't the only one to now the new addition to the Femenil. So just running through the other new additions here, Geisa Ferreira or Gesa for short, from Madrid CFF, that not being Real Madrid, but Madrid CFF, the other Madrid team that's not Atletico Madrid, so, or Rayo Vallecano. There you go. So Madrid CFF, the one that doesn't have a La Liga mirror image, if you will, for the men's version. But anyway, she's a 24-year-old Brazilian winger. Last year, she was a joint top scorer in the league in Spain last season alongside Ashuala with 20 goals, which, again, is not an insane mark. But because Barcelona, it was a lot of you score here, and sharing the wealth, you didn't really see one primary goal scorer the way you used to with Jenny Hermoso through the years. Then she herself was also injured. We'll get to her later on. But there's Nuria Rabano, a 23-year-old left back, who is likely Ana Marie Krnjegovic. I'm going to struggle through that one. Always. I've said Krnjegovic's name like 100 times. It's never going to happen. So she is the starter, that being Krnjegovic, and Jana Fernandez, a homegrown Barcelona player who is still just 20. She and Rabano will likely fight for that backup left box spot this season. And then other young defender in Emma Ramirez and Laia Cardina are back from loans and represent more depth along the back line. So you're going to see them occasionally, but probably not in the big matches. And then Salma Perriello is the other new face. She's an 18-year-old winger from Zaragoza, from Villarreal. She was a sprinter growing up, believe it or not, winning gold medals for Spain at youth competitions. And then they kind of put a ball on her path and they're like, oh, this works too. So she's arriving with a lot of physical tools as well. But yeah, so a lot of young depth pieces. And so, yes, you had Walsh as a world transfer fee, but these now two other parts of this. Gesa, of course, was brought in because Barcelona was looking to replace Lecky Martins almost like for like. And then obviously bringing in Walsh in the midfield for Alexis Putellas. So Gesa as a goal scorer, as much more of a goal scorer than Martins too. It must be said here that her role and the expectations for her is where she's going to put the ball in the back of the net in much greater effect than Martins did. So Gesa coming in as, you know, we'll say the quote unquote big signing other than Walsh, and then a lot of other depth pieces, which the depth pieces are interesting too, because we're seeing that Barcelona are building up their academy. We're seeing Mingueza's sister is one of the stars for Barcelona B, and we've seen her debut. Again, it's all kind of meshing together because we're going to get to Vicky Lopez later on in the show. But you get my point here that it seems like, you know, Gesa was the player that Barcelona knew they needed. That was that attacker we're talking about. And then everybody else is kind of just a depth signing for their bench. But their bench, interestingly enough, I think it says a lot to do about the locker room, how the leaders are in their prime and they're older. And then everybody else is kind of fighting for those other minutes. And they're all very young players. I can imagine it's pretty cutthroat at the bottom there, that roster.
UEFA Champions League Soccer is streaming on Paramount Plus. 9 months of heart-stopping, hold-your-breath exhilaration is underway with the biggest stars, top teams, and scariest fan bases across Europe. Watch every match from the group stage through the knockout rounds as Benzema and Real Madrid, oh I know, defend their title against Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea, PSG, Barcelona, I'll say it again, Barcelona, and more in soccer's biggest club competition. So don't miss a single sweat-filled second of regulation time, stoppage time, and extra time. And stream every match of the UEFA Champions League live, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, first off, like you said, it shows that they knew what they needed to, you know, the positions that they needed to reinforce, and they did that, especially with Gaze. Although, it's going to be an interesting signing to watch because she doesn't exactly fit the Barcelona philosophy, at least at first sight. but I think she will bring new things as well, and she will get used to it. I mean, I thought Rolfo wouldn't be the best fit for Barcelona last year, and then she was playing as a left wing back, and her evolution, like the way she developed just in that season, was amazing. I think she became a better player than she was before, and I think we will see that with Geyser as well.
When you say new fit, do you mean that in this 4-3-3 that Barcelona plays, where she doesn't really fit necessarily particularly on the wing or as a center forward, but she is more of a hybrid kind of be everywhere? You know, when I see her, she kind of reminds me of a, on the men's side of things years ago, even a Thierry Henry, where a player that is expected to score, to put themselves in goal scoring positions, but they kind of need to have kind of a free role. And yet we know in Barcelona's 4-3-3, it's that attacking midfielder, whether it's Alexia or whether it was Aitana or whether it's, we've seen Patry this season, that player is the one who's allowed to be free and allowed to roam, and you deal with them defensively. And the wingers kind of have to stay out wide in that quote unquote Barcelona 4-3-3, whether it's the men's version or the women's version. So is that what it is, that positionally she's just not necessarily fitting, or is it a technical thing, or is it positional play, or?
It's for me, the free player in the Barcelona formation is actually Mariona. She's the one who you'll see show up on the left, on the right, in the defense, everywhere. It's crazy. And so that role, that free role, is already filled up. But for me, Geyser, what's the thing with her is she is, she's a free spirit, like I said, and she doesn't always commit to that plan and that fluidity of play that characterizes Barcelona. She's a more, you think of her, she's a very quick, technically skilled player, of course, but she doesn't always make the right decision. And with Barcelona, it's all about making the right decisions all the time. Mm-hmm. And Geyser doesn't always fit that role. But again, I think also the fact that she's such a vertical player in terms of, and that's also why they want her, because both eyes on goal, and even she's starting on the wing. But she's definitely a player that isn't, that hasn't typical Barcelona written across her forehead. But again, I think that's also good because it gives them many different options. Maicens was also a different player from Mariona, who she was competing with on the left. And also in that sense, she was a faster winger, more vertical, more eyes on the goal. And she ran up to the line, to the end line, more of a crosser than Mariona, for example. Whereas Mariona is very unique player. So I think Geyser, like you said, is filling up that Martin's role, although with her own, with her own skill set and her own characteristics and also her own flaws, which Martin's also had. So I think it's a very interesting signing in terms of, in the sense that she's different.
Yeah.
And sometimes a different player can fit, or they may not fit, but I think she will, because I think Jonathan Geraldes has shown that he can work with the players in ways that bring up certain characteristics and certain skills that we didn't even see before in them. So I think it'll work out. Yeah. As for other signings, it's also a matter of, bringing depth to your squad, because Barcelona has such a big injury problem. Their most important players are injured all the time. You see Aitana, Mariona, Alexia. Jenny was also injured. Oshawala also gets injured a lot.
Andrea Falcone was injured just a ton, almost never played. There was the other Brazilian midfielder that was, I did not say that, I don't remember her name, but she barely played at all, and she was in there for like almost 2-3 years.
Yeah, it's been a big problem. Graham Hansen also injured, but that was also her heart problem, which is different. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they have such a big injury problem that they need quality options. They need quality substitutes, and they need substitutes for those substitutes, because there was a point last season where they had, I think, 15 players out injured, which is absurd. It's just absurd. And they really need to maybe take a long, hard look at how they're doing player fitness, because it's ridiculous. I don't see any other team in the world having such big problems with so many injuries. So yeah, they need.
I have seen on the women's side of things that I have seen, like, there's academic research now currently being done at that level in women's football about now the number of games they're playing. Like, we talk about how the men are playing too many games. We're talking about the World Cup and Euros and blah, 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 blah. I mean, those are just big competitions, the Nations League, all this stuff, and just the increased wear and tear on their bodies. And the same thing goes for the women's side of things, because A, now these players are being professionalized a lot sooner than they used to, and they're playing more games. I mean, Barcelona is now playing twice a week, where for decades they were playing once a week. And the level of training and the level of training required, you're just seeing more ACL injuries. And I mean, the science dictates it out that ACL injuries per team, per player, is more prevalent in the women's game than it is even in the men's game. So, I mean, those are things that we don't want to take for granted, that you losing all these players to injury. And yeah, it's a tough thing, because even if they're recovering quicker by certain injuries, because people are different, doesn't mean that they're still not missing all these players throughout an entire season. Yeah, and absolutely, depth is completely necessary, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's another thing, which I was going to say, and I forgot like a second ago, which is, besides, I mean, also when players are on their periods, they're much more susceptible to get injured. And a lot of these players, truth is, especially the slightly older ones, 25 and up, they became professional. Like, unlike the men who are, you know, go through the youth system expecting to be professional. Mm-hmm. And that is a professional setup in and of itself to prepare professionals. The women's game is just now becoming professional, you know, across the board. So a lot of these players were not developed to be professionals.
Yeah,
they were not developed in a professional setting, a professional setup, and a lot of them only became professional players in their 20s, 21, 22, 23. So, like, these are not bodies that have been prepared for the wear and tear of, you know, the highest level of competition from their 12th to 13th birthday.
Yeah.
The men's game is, in that sense, it's a lot, you know, it's, the women's game still has a long way to go to make sure that these players are, these women are ready for professional football from a young age, because that's what happens with men.
Well, I think it's a perfect transition to talk about two players in particular. So I know we're going to say Jenny and Lecky Martins and Layla, because those are the big three that are now missing, that have moved on, that we're talking about talent on the field winning Champions League. Those are the questions. But down the roster too, the two that really stick out to me is Melanie Serrano finally retiring. And why, when I saw her retirement thing, like, very rarely does something like, not even choke me up, but does something like really get me and just kind of stick with me for the day, right? I mean, I always show people that my favorite picture of Barcelona, anything, is Iniesta sitting on the field by himself when some of the stadium lights are turned off. Just my favorite photo related to FC Barcelona. And then the one with Melanie Serrano too kind of gets me in the way that, you know, she was a part of the unprofessional time. She was a part of not the buses. They didn't have buses, the cars, and taking the train to these away games, right? Like, she was a part of just that. She became professional, and I believe it was 28 years old, I think it was, or 27, 28, is when she technically became a professional in 2015, when Barcelona's Femení team became professional. But Spain just became professional last year. So Melanie Serrano was technically only a professional, not for her own team, but in Spain for one season, and she's in her mid-30s. So for Serrano, certainly things were different. And when you said that about players preparing themselves for whatever comes next, now we don't have the reasons. She kept it quiet, but 22-year-old Andela Andahar, who was on loan last season, was expected to return and be another one of those options, along with Claudia Pina, who is, you want to talk about a professional, she's just incredible at her age, but Andahar, 22, is supposed to be one of those death pieces because Bruno Villamala, another young player who was out for most of last season because of a nasty leg injury. And so there was going to be this trident, if you will, of young attacking forwards to try to help add depth. But again, Andahar just announces on her Instagram that she's retired of 22. And, you know, I think in the men's game, if we had seen that, right, if a player retires at 20, 25, or a player for a club like FC Barcelona, you're going, how? Like, why can't they play somewhere else? Why are they choosing to do this? And again, Andahar's reasons are her own. But to see a 22-year-old retire is just, you know, kind of jarring because you don't see that in the inverse on the men's side of things. But yeah, I mean, you can respond to those two, but I also want to kind of lead you into the next, obviously, chapter of this, which is Jenny Hermoso goes to Pachua because, again, I think she is one of those players that is her prime is now in the back view mirror. She knows that injuries have piled up. So she goes to Mexico. Lecky Martins goes to PSG. I've talked about on the show before, but we'll say for Barcelona's perspective, unceremonious ways where she kind of said she was going to resign, then she didn't, and then all of a sudden she's a PSG player. And then Leyla does go to Man City. It was the end of her contract, so that was her choice. She goes to Man City, but that means that Barcelona now have, in theory, a glaring hole at left back, as we're kind of describing, because Leyla was just solid. She was foundational. She was just always where you needed her to be, and just a quality left back, even if she didn't make the headline. So go kind of go wherever you want to with those. We also have, if you want to add to it, Andrea Pereira and Andrea Falcón both went to America in Mexico after their contracts were terminated. And then Gio was sold to Arsenal, the young teenage Brazilian, American or wherever she would choose to play. But after a fallout with the club, which was kind of interesting, claiming mistreatment about where she would play her international ball because she was eligible for Brazil, the U.S. and Spain. So apparently the club was kind of pressuring her to want to play for Spain, but she didn't want to. She wanted to play for the U.S. or Brazil. And so the club and FIFA, they would have been at fault, and the club came out against the accusations, of course. And then obviously with her transfer, it seems like that chapter is closed. But again, it's interesting that she had her side of the story. Then the club comes out and says, we and FIFA did nothing wrong, but of course they're going to say that. So I think that story is, again, kind of buried and gone. But still, Barcelona were able to kind of dodge that PR bullet, if you will. But yeah, so as far as all the exits and all the exits, it is interesting to me, Ines, as I kind of threw all that at you, all the different ways in which these players left the club and for all their different reasons and how each one seems to be a story. There seems to be an interesting different thing about each exit this summer.
About that, I was actually, I interviewed a Portuguese international just like a week or 2 weeks ago. And she said something very interesting in that sense, which was it's because she's 26 years old. So she's been here for a lot of the historical steps of Portuguese women's football. And she said, I want to play, you know, female players tend to play more, you know, for longer than the men. But it takes loving what you do because there are so many challenges. And I think that's a really key aspect of being a female footballer nowadays still, which is there are so many challenges still at this point. Low wages still, professionalization, okay, cool, but how do you do it? I mean, the Spanish league was stopped for a week because they couldn't start playing because of the referee conundrum. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have the rigors of many teams still not having a professional setup, and that all piles on and it chips away at a player's resolve to be, you know, to be a professional footballer. And I can imagine, of course, I'm not in her shoes. I don't know what she went through, but I can imagine that Candela may have gone through some of that. You know, she got to, you know, to the end of the season and said, you know, I'm tired of this because I don't even know like where I'm going with this. And maybe she felt that football wasn't giving her as much as it was taking. Yeah. So,
I mean, the good news is she, of course. The good news is she did come up through the academy, and so she does have a degree. So, I mean,
yeah, exactly.
The positive thing about FC Barcelona at this moment, and some of those, again, very, 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 very few clubs, is that they are endowing these players with kind of chapters or ways out of football. And if she just chose to take that path, again, it's better for her. I mean, she arguably has a better job than you and I. She already arguably has a career that's going to be more lucrative. You know what I mean? Especially the women's football, which is
hard. No doubt.
And there are jobs out there, like there are women's football that are they're retiring at 25 and becoming engineers, and they're going to make five times what they would have made as a women's football, professional women's football player.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a point where you have to make a choice, and maybe women's, like where women's football is at the moment, maybe it's just not enough to make it choose football over another career. Also with how short a professional athlete's career is, you know, you'll play until your 30s and that's it. And then you have to rely on another plan or a new plan A. It's not a plan B, but a new plan A. And maybe she was like, okay, I mean, I've got this career laid out in front of me that I can take. I'll make more money because women's football still pays so little. And, you know, I can take this path that is safer. Maybe I like it just as much as I do football. I don't know. I'm not in her head, but I can understand a lot of ways, you know, that in which she would have felt that would have made her decide to retire from football. Because, again, the women's game still isn't half as lucrative as the men's games. Even for players that play for the top clubs, which is
for context, last year, Villarreal, the players for Villarreal made the same amount or less than players in the National League of the UK pyramid. That is the fifth level, as in the semi-professional level in the UK. Those players made as much as the Villarreal players who were getting stomped out by FC Barcelona players who were making, again, 10 times, 50 times what they were making. But okay, so I do want to now kind of focus on, you know, that's the whole thing about the Féminis though, and why I want to cover them, why we're talking about them, why I'm positive about them, because we're seeing that the Féminis, and especially taking the, if Barcelona play their cards right, if you will, you have, I mean, there are millions of culés in the world. There are millions of Barcelona fans. And if you can get, again, we've seen 91,000 people twice in the Camp Nou. It's a real thing. It's a real movement. It's a real thing happening that people are paying attention now. So I think what's also fair about women's football to do is to kind of actually analyze the tactics and look at what we're seeing on the field, because, you know, Barcelona, they won a Champions League. And last season, I think because they didn't win the treble, it feels like a disappointment, right? It feels like they couldn't get over the final hurdle of Lyon. And now this season, they have to do it without Alexis Putellas, who even if she returns, it would be at the very, very last minute. And I think that's too much to be expected of her at that point. So expect her for next year. You already mentioned Pastore is moving up the field. We've already seen it so far. As you said, maybe the best defensive midfield in the world is now playing almost an attacking midfielder at times. Unfortunately, she picked up a concussion last weekend. But Aitana Bonmati, also missing, as you said, with her health has not been great since the preseason. And so we're seeing some different interesting things. I mean, even against UD Granadilla, Tenerife, who kind of gave Barcelona a fight. It was 0-0 at halftime, which, again, if you're an opposition team that's not Real Madrid or Atletico Madrid and it's halftime and it's 0-0, that's a moral victory if those exist. And they still lose 2-0. Both goals come in second half. And even one of them came on a deflection. It wasn't, I mean, Gaysa's goal was not like this masterpiece, this Barcelona goal. It was a deflection that went 30 yards into the goal. But we are seeing a bit of Lucy Bronze, who I should have mentioned her as one of the new additions. How did I not? Because she was the earliest addition. So Lucy Bronze, missed speaking about her. But I think you could argue that, I mean, I know Carrie Walsh was more expensive, but Lucy Bronze is probably the biggest name who was added to Barcelona this season. And we're already seeing her versatility, where because Marta Torrejón exists behind her in that depth chart, and Marta has been the regular starter for years now, that Lucy Bronze can be a right back, but in truth, she's also going to be inverting from that fullback spot into the midfield, but she can also just play in the midfield, as we saw Guirnaldas just put her in the midfield, straight up next to Walsh, because they got good chemistry, and I mean, Bronze has a technical ability to handle that kind of role and position, so you're already seeing a lot of versatility with what Guialdez has to do to try to figure out what do I do with that Alexis Putellas all season long.
I think like one thing I would love to see more of is Mariona in midfield. I'm a Mariona fan. Like I love Mariona.
Here in the book of the podcast, it's Alexia, it's Aitana, and it's Mariona. That's our big three, and by our I mean. Those are the big three. I love watching Mariona play along with Alexia and Anna. It's awesome.
She's a unique player in terms of the way she's a disruptor, which functions perfectly within the Barcelona setup. But anyway, about the tactical innovations that Jonathan Gálvez will probably be forced to make, which he already has done some in the first game. I think with an intelligent, skilled player, he can do a lot. If you look, I don't like setting comparisons to men to male players, but if you look, for example, at João Cancelo from Manchester City, how he's supposedly a right back and he's basically everywhere on the pitch, wherever he fits, and you can have that with players that are both extremely intelligent and extremely skilled technically, and Lucy Bronze is one of those. Mariona, Patri, those players give you a depth of options. It's like they're worth two or three players at the same time. And without Alexia, Jonathan Gálvez will have to kind of lean on those kind of adaptations and those tactical tweaks that will make Barcelona really gel. Because truth is, I mean, you're missing your Ballon d'Or. You're missing the player that has been the most, the key player for the past two or three seasons. And how do you solve that? You solve that, and especially when you're missing Aitana as well, and you might be missing others during the season because injuries again. I think one good thing that has the last season showed for Barcelona was that Gálvez is able to be more versatile, or rather more, he makes concessions more easily tactically than Luis Cortés did. And his game is more fluid in that there's that structure, but his game is more fluid than Cortés's was, in my opinion. And so, and he already, I mean, what he did with Hofo, again, she came in as a winger, and she's playing as a left wing back, which, you know, can also be a great option for making up for Leila's departure, especially considering that, you know, Sunegarčević, I think she's a quality player, of course, but I don't know if she's a Barcelona starter. And I think with Hofo playing as a left wing back, that can be solved in a lot of games because Hofo is such an intelligent player. Again, they're so smart, and I think that's been also the focus of their transfer market. You know, getting smart, technical skilled players that can play, you know, anywhere the manager needs them to, so they can make up for any losses, you know, injury, whatever. And so I think we will see more of Jonathan Gálvez having to tweak tactically this season. I mean, I don't think we can count on Alexia to be ready this season. I think it would be unfair to her also, and to Barcelona itself, because you can't rush a player to fitness, and I hope they don't do that, because that's usually very, very, very bad for the player long term. And so yeah, they will have to find new solutions. I'm excited for that. Again, one thing I would like, please play Mariona in midfield, because I think she's perfect there. Yeah. And we saw some games last season where she brought something entirely new to the table, playing in that position. Now they have Gaze. She's able to play in the left wing as well. Also, Hofo is able to play in the left wing. So, yeah, I mean, I think these players are all, you can move them. I mean, formation is just that. It's the starting game plan. And then you can build on that in any way you want. And I think we will see a new Barcelona in that sense, that they will maybe will be an advantage in relation to opponents, because we will see new things that we weren't used to see, because the truth is Barcelona didn't bring anything new last season in terms of how they played. Well, they did, but you know, it was still very much the Barcelona we were used to seeing.
I mean, with the exception of Ralfo, I mean, again, Engen was the only other big name brought in. And yeah, and I think that's a good point too about, again, I think I have I've done a disservice to the Femenil that it took us this long to really be focusing on the fact that they can go undefeated in League F, which has been renamed, because between all the players we just already mentioned, including Ralfo, and I think, to me, the biggest way you replace Alexis Putellas is really just putting Caroline Graham Hansen front and center. And I think she's the best player on the team. And what wins at football at all levels, it doesn't matter where you're at in world football, the team usually with the better players wins the games. And Caroline Graham Hansen, I think by just putting her boots on and being healthy and being on the field, is arguably the best player in almost every match. I mean, I think, yeah, you saw in the Champions League with Ada Hegerberg. I mean, yes, she is just unbelievable. I mean, Lyon have unbelievable players. And there are some players around the other teams that we can talk about that are going to give Barcelona a fight in the Champions League. But Caroline Graham Hansen wasn't on that podium last season at the Ballon d'Or. And I think this season you can just put her down. If Barcelona has any bit of success, if they make the semifinal of the Champions League, I think playing for her home country of Norway, that does kind of hurt her a little bit, because Norway just doesn't make the same waves in the women's game that a team like, well, you'd expect Spain to do, or France or Germany or the UK or England. So you're just talking about, you know, not having the same international, or even, you know, the United States of America, of course, with those players. So you're just having just not the same international cachet, if you will. But Caroline Graham Hansen is just awesome. I think she could be the best player on the team. And to the point about midfield options too, now I want to introduce to you Vicky Lopez, who was born in Madrid, played for Madrid CFF at youth level. And again, this kind of goes to your point about how young can you prepare these players for? And again, another positive thing, as much as it scares you to kind of burn out these teenagers, like we see again with Ansu Fati and Pedri, and you worry about them at 16, 17. Same thing goes for the women's game too, but it's kind of, again, a little jarring to see a young player, a 16-year-old player, someone who's not 21, 22, 23 in the women's game, kind of doing things. But she moved to Barcelona B this offseason, so she's actually technically a new addition as well, coming from Madrid CFF youth level. She scored, I want to slow this up here, she scored 60 goals. 60 goals in 17 matches. 60 in 17 in the 2020-21 Youth League season, making her senior debut last September for Madrid CFF. So playing in the first division in Spain is not at all crazy for her, even for Barcelona B, even for Barcelona's Femenil, rather. So that said, at 16 years and 49 days, she became the youngest player to ever feature for the Barça Femenil, at least since they became professional last decade. Of course, I think some things may have happened before that when it was more off the books. But she also becomes, because you can't debut till 16, the youngest player to, I believe, play for FC Barcelona since like the 1930s or 20s or whatever, since they had like a 15-year-old pop in there. So as an attacking midfielder, any contribution she provides this season is a net positive. But, you know, it's what I haven't seen from the Femenil, because, again, they've been professional not too long, and the players like Melanie Serrano, who were around for a long time, kind of just held down the fort and were those depth pieces. But now with Barcelona's academy being what it is, and kind of building up that youth academy on the women's side too, now you have the ability to see players like Vicky Lopez. And I think this is the, other than Claudia Pena, so this is really the second, where when Claudia Pena first arrived on the scene, she was 18, and I was like, oh, there's like, this is the best 18-year-old forward that I've ever seen in the women's game that wasn't an American that I've been following or knew about. So this is the best like European forward I'd ever seen at that age. And same thing, just watching her in one game. And yeah, it was 0-0 when she went off the field, or they just scored the first goal, whatever it was. Still, to be 16, just having turned 16, and to be that good, that is just, it's exciting. It's awesome to be able to circle that player and go, great, I potentially get to watch her for the next 10 years.
Yeah, she's phenomenal. She's crazy good, crazy talented. And I think there's a key difference between her and Ansu Fati and Pedri, for example, which is Barcelona men were desperate. And they were
fair.
And so those two crazy talented players had to play all the time. Whereas with Barcelona Femení, you know, you can actually bring her onto the team more calmly without having to rely on her to get results, because you have so many good players on the team that can do what she does, you know, her position. So they're not, she's not going to be rushed into any level that she isn't ready for. She's not going to be overworked, overplayed. So she has all the time in the world to grow into the player that we all know that she can be, which, you know, and that is a phenomenal player. To add to Claudia Pina, I would also add Bruna Villamala.
Yeah, she was 82.
She's also, she's also amazing. The amount of goals she scored in her debut season for Barcelona was just crazy. Vika Lopez has all the time in the world to grow and to settle into the first team. She will get her spot in the starting lineup sooner or later. She has that. I think Barcelona are allowing her the that comfort, that, you know, that wiggle room in terms of, okay, you grow at your own pace, and we are there to, you know, to be, we'll be with you every step of the way. We will hold your hand as you grow into the first team and, again, fulfill your potential, because her potential is unimaginable, really. I saw her last season play for Madrid CFF, and humiliating, so to speak, fully grown-up players with a gal nerve that, you know, you only see in those players that are so good and also sure of their quality, because you have to be sure of your quality. There has to be a certain arrogance to your game to know that you can do the things you can do. You know, you only see that assuredness, that serenity on the field from players who were truly destined to be great, because those are the ones who are like, I'm not even affected by anything around me. I'm just doing what I do. I'm playing my game. I'm showing my skills, and I'm having fun on the field. And that's,
you see that pausa in her game already. Like, you see that understanding, that vision, that recognition of, hey, I need to slow down or speed things up. And being able to pace a game like that at that age, like, again, as you said, it's really special player.
She's unbelievable. And she can, again, if she's given room to grow at her own pace, she will be, you know, I don't think she has a ceiling.
The challenge is, though, that looking at the Barcelona B team, they're obviously, because the investments, even in the B team for the Femení, they're just slapping opponents around. So the question becomes then is, how useful is keeping her down with the Barcelona B team? Is it better to have 10 minutes here, 15 minutes here? I mean, she can do both, of course. Like, she can jump between the two, but what's more beneficial? Where are the minutes going to be most beneficial, right? Is it lesser first team minutes, or is it just like playing as much in the Barcelona B team as possible, even if the score lines are just outrageous and she's kind of getting a little bit too good for that level, right? Like, Vicky Lopez at this point, her level really is like being a starter for Madrid CFF or being a starter for one of these other teams in Spanish football. But again, she plays for the Femení, so minutes are hard to come by, and you have all these other players that, but as you said, injuries are going to give her minutes this year. Injuries are going to give her opportunities. So that's what I would say. Like, if she can continue to seize the day, we make the most of the minutes she has and go from there. So where we can see her, as this is kind of the final segment here, is I think of all the good news, again, Alexi Putellas, that one kind of, you know, shattered my heart, really frustrating, really sad to see. But I think the good news that kind of counterbalanced that this year was that it's now called League F, which I think is a little easier to remember than having to, well, I guess Primera Division wasn't that hard. But anyway, League F, even shorter. So it's now, as I said, in its second season being fully professional. And it made even bigger news with a new broadcasting deal. And another big part of talking about the women's game is that broadcasting deals, and that is where money, I mean, I talk all the time about the Premier League or the Liga, like the big disparity is, of course, yes, the financial institutions, like as I mean, the clubs as financial institutions, but that also comes because of broadcasting revenue. Like, if not, we're talking about gate revenue as opposed to broadcasting revenue. And that is what separates leagues around the world. It's broadcasting revenue. So DAZN, again, it's DAZN. That's what we're talking about, but it's pronounced DAZN. They have acquired the global rights to broadcast Spain's top women's football division. We've seen the Champions League as well. So you want to watch Champions League football? DAZN. You want to watch League F? DAZN. So Spain's top women's football division for the next 5 years will be on DAZN until the summer of 2027. And that deal gives them 240 Premier Division matches per season. Here in the U.S., some of those matches are on DAZN. Will be on YouTube for free, which is, again, how I watched the Granada-Tenerife match. So if you're not willing to pay for DAZN or it's not really, you know, exactly what you want, there's still going to be free games available on YouTube occasionally. And also, a reminder, the Champions League games are also generally free on DAZN. So that is now the centralized location to watch women's football if you're a Femini fan, as well as watching the Champions League, which is just awesome. Like, it's awesome to see a deal, pen to paper, here's where you can watch the Spanish league.
Yeah, I think it's an amazing deal, to be honest. Also, I did not know it was pronounced DAZN. You learn something new every day. T-I-L.
I mispronounce a lot of things, so when I do get it right occasionally, it's good.
It's T-I-L. Today I learned DAZN.
I have to give you great. I think it's an amazing. Before we started the show, just so everyone knows behind the curtain, like, we actually had a little 5-minute session where you let me know how to pronounce all the other things in our show. So I'm glad I got one thing. So TLI for me was all the names that we threw out there.
Assuming I pronounced them right. Sorry. That's another question entirely. I think it's an amazing deal, to be honest. Availability is so important at the moment for the women's game. Availability. Even more so than anything else. I'll give you an example, which for me is close to home. So I can watch every single game of the Spanish league for €2. I can watch every single game of the Women's Champions League for €0. And I can watch the Women's Super League England for nothing as well with the FA player. And also, DAZN are also going to have the FA Cup and some other games, which I don't exactly remember, from England. So technically I can watch all of those games and the NWSL also on Twitch for free. So all of that content I can watch for a sum total of €2 in Portugal. To be able to watch every single game of the Portuguese Women's League, I need to pay, if I'm not mistaken, €30 a month.
Jeez.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
And some of them are on YouTube, others are on a public channel, open channel. Others are in a closed channel, and then there's some in teams channels, and it's all scattered, and it's expensive. Some of them are super expensive, and so there's no availability there, you know. And sometimes you don't even know which games are going to air where, which is outrageous, in my opinion. So to be able to have the entirety of the Spanish league for €2, I mean, a month, that's almost, I'm not going to say that's nothing because there are people who don't make a lot of money, obviously, but that's a really, really, really good price.
Yeah, it's affordable.
It's really affordable. And then even so, you have a lot of the games on YouTube as well. So I think it's amazing. It's an amazing deal. It brings makes women's football available to everyone, which is what we need, not just for the fan from the fan standpoint, but also how are you going to convince girls to play football if they don't see women mm-hmm. playing? You know, if girls see women playing football, they're going to, you know, be like, I want to be like them. I want to be like Alexia. I want to be like Caroline Graham Hansen, who, by the way, I haven't said this, but unbelievable. She's the most technically skilled player, one of the most technically skilled players I've ever seen. But they see those women that are growing, you know, with the growth of women's football, are growing to be idols as well. You know, they're going to be, they're becoming girls heroes, but not just girls, also boys, you know, and that's how you get more people, more young girls playing football, which is something that in England, they talked about the grassroots level, you know, that was so underdeveloped still when they won the Euros, because that's also what you need. You need players, you need a lot more players, and you need more clubs giving chances to players. And that's all. That also comes from the availability of, you know, also from the money that circulates, yes, and from the growth, general growth of women's football, but also the availability, being able to see games, to watch games, to see women's football on the news. How do you see women's football on the news? By making games available for everyone, because us journalists also watch a lot of games on the TV. We can't be everywhere. Mm-hmm. And if we can watch, if you can watch two games live a week, that's amazing. And eight games on the TV, then we can, you know, we can have a whole match day under our belt. Whereas if you make the games unavailable for everyone, then you're not going to have, journalists write about women's football as much as they would like to, because they need to watch too. We can be everywhere. We don't have
I can speak to the 5 years I've been doing this, that like when I started to do this and I would do feminine content, people not only were not paying attention, but they weren't paying attention because they physically couldn't watch the matches. How can you care about something that you can't see? And so at this point, there's a number of people listening to this show, especially those who are still here at the end. They care about the Femini and they watch the Femini, and the Femini is now available to them, which is just awesome night and day.
Yeah. And how can women change minds about women's football if they're not able to show women's football to the minds of that they are trying to change?
Yeah.
It's also about that. No, sorry. Continue, please.
No. You're right. Availability, again, as you said, is everything. So it's one of those things I've been saying for years. Like, if you put it on, if there's a way to watch it, then you'll see the audience. Again, I'll keep going back to it, but 91,000 people twice at the Camp Nou tells you that there's a market for it. And so market opportunities should, again, it's financial, but it is. It's financial. So this deal on DAZN, having tangible numbers that you could give to broadcasting, that you can present for a larger broadcasting deal, which again, just means more money for everybody in the women's game. So a bigger broadcasting deal post, again, DAZN has been awesome, but in the summer of 2027, or really they'll start negotiating the one 2026, coming to the table with the numbers that I know that they're going to get, again, it resets the market. And that means the world transfer fee to bring this all full circle is going to be broken time and time and time again as more money is brought to women's football. So speaking of my listeners being able to check out content and availability, where can people find you available, Ines?
They can find me on Twitter at Ines4Senpaiu.
In the show notes. There you go. That's where, just click on her name.
And yeah, or that. And also, you know, Rádio Renascença, but I write in Portuguese. So unless, maybe that's a good chance, a good way to learn Portuguese if you want. It's also very close to Spanish. So, you know, if you're trying to learn Spanish, you can try learning Portuguese too. Or you can help.
Of the 2% of our listener base in Portugal, this is for you. There you go. So
yeah, 2%. Go Portugal. Go 2%ers.
Yeah. All right. Well, Ines, thank you. You gave me more than enough time. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. So we'd love to have you back again. We're going to be continuing to pop in with the Femini occasionally every few weeks or months and try to get the biggest news stories that's happened. But again, the big one is, how do they replace Alexi Putellas? And the answer is with a number of new players and with a number of new faces that you can now, again, the other big headline, that you can now watch. So those are things to know from the show. So again, we thank you so much for your time, and thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Or Sports Center.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.